thanks to Jimmy and Joan for having me. It's really great to be here. This is the first place I ever did a poetry reading, probably 20 years ago, something like that. Beautiful Bob Paycheck was there. And I think it's the first place I ever attended a poetry reading, too. And it's great to read. I'm super excited about Sarah's book and that Professor Jaquila, as I have to call her, got sober today. It's fantastic. And Employee of the Year, Adam Macho. So I'm honored to read with all these people. I'm going to read some poems from the Slaughterhouse Poems. These are mostly set in the 80s. And they're in the voice of a teenager who has a very bad job and is looking for work. First one's called, oh my gosh, stuck on the floor. This is called Girl Money. The lifeguards at Park and Pool always got laid with the girls who worked the concession stand. The girls who worked the concession stand poured vodka into the Slurpee machine and stayed drunk for 3 months. The lifeguards mostly broke up fights in the kiddie pool and made sure teenagers didn't screw in the 5 feet, but I could barely swim and I looked stupid wearing a whistle. When I asked about shoveling with the landscaping crew, the college dropout in charge blew dope smoke in my face and said, "Seriously?" So I drove to the gas station and pumped 2 gallons into the tank of my parents' Oldsmobile Cutlass, 12 years old, but still running. The unemployment lines ran from Pittsburgh east to Johnstown, and I wanted to buy beer or maybe a gold necklace for my girlfriend, which is where I was headed so we could fool around in her basement. Her mom stomped around upstairs cooking dinner, pasta again, but the sex was still lovely, still like taking flight, even when I climbed off and she wiped her belly with a sock. I wanted to bring flowers, roses, and not the short stem kind, or take her to a movie, and not some $2 matinee, or buy her dinner at Houlihan's, somewhere nice that had appetizers. Because girls were leaving boys who didn't have money, boys who didn't show up with wine coolers and teddy bears. I drove west to Youngwood, past the jail, to Newstand, where my dad worked in an auto plant on the assembly line in the paint department, blowing sealant with an air gun, even though he was an electrician, because they didn't need electricians. They didn't need anyone anywhere. Old men laid off from factories, and ex-housewives flipped burgers at McDonald's and dropped the fries at Arby's and Rack's. So I tried the golf course in Greensburg, but they weren't hiring unless your parents were members. My parents weren't members. They believed in making money, not spending. I knew one member, Mr. Connors, but he was a fucking creep. He'd asked to see my dick when I was 12, and I still regretted not killing him. And anyway, all he talked about was Harvard. Back when Harvard meant something, he said. And I thought, meant what, you fucking pedophile? I didn't need a recommendation to Harvard. I didn't know what the fuck a Harvard was. Or what a martini was, or where the door was in that fucking goose house on the hill. And I wasn't that desperate. Not ever. So I drove to the Italian restaurant in Jeanette, where every customer was rumored to be in the mob, know the mob, or owe the mob $1 million, a left knee, a firstborn daughter. The guy outside parking car said, "Nah." And inside, the owner sat drunk at the bar, dressed in a bad sweater and a gold chain. He handed me $20 and said, "Seriously, don't tell my wife." $20 was a lot of money. I had visions of perfume and silver earrings. Down the road, I pumped 2 more gallons of gas. The gas station used to pump it for you. At the country club, I stood by the courts and watched horny housewives rush the net so their panties showed. I would have taken minimum wage. I would have taken less under the table. The summer is an inferno when you're broke. I would have been a disc jockey at the punk club where all the pinheads slammed a half-life. I would have carried kegs at the beer distributor until the silver metal blimps broke my back in two. I pumped another gallon into the tank and found a payphone and called my girl. I said, "You don't know how much I love you." She said, "Let's go out tonight. Let's play mini golf." Mini golf is $6 with a coupon, plus drinks and snacks and more gas in the car. I would have worked at the hotel running numbers and sweeping up peanut shells. I would have emptied out the video poker machines, not swiped any quarters, made the night deposit, and rushed back to clean up the all-you-care-to-eat taco bar. I hoped to never work at the hospital, and I hated the nursing home where the old people lined up on the front porch in wheelchairs like race car drivers going nowhere. But I tried to apply anywhere, even after the receptionist said, "You're much too young," and handed me a lollipop, not the application I reached for. I pumped another gallon of gas and headed home while my girl and beautiful girls everywhere waited. This one's set a little more inside the slaughterhouse. This is called The Man with the Long Silver Blade. The man with the long silver blade called from his steel table, and I could smell the whiskey from 3 feet away. He was a meat cutter, 40 years old, and made his living, as he once said, carving real big roasts into real little roasts. He stood at the top of the food chain in the slaughterhouse, an okay guy, the ones he threw a cow ball at my head as a joke, then pointed his knife in a vicious stabbing motion when I whipped the slimy testicle back. Now he said, "My wife is leaving me, and my daughter is fucking a drug addict. What about you?" And I said, "I don't know." In the next room, the gears of the sausage machine ground gristle. It was an awful machine, equal parts mixing bowl and conveyor belt, a tube shooting ground meat into pig guts, literally guts, meaning the cleaned out intestines of freshly killed sows. Everywhere smelled of red peppers and vomit, fennel and black pepper, dried blood and bleach. The intestines filled like skinny balloons stretched over the nozzle of a helium tank. Squirt, fill, tie the intestine, squirt, fill, tie, down the line. I'd work 5 hours without a break, and another 5 hours waited after lunch. The man with the long silver blade rocked back and said, "What about you? You a drug addict?" I'd seen adults drunk before, even swaying in their boots, but not before lunchtime. So when he asked, "You want to score some blow?" I said, "I don't know." Because desperation was not always truth. Desperation was not even desperation, unless it was about money or love or both, but not drugs, I thought, unless drugs were money or love. I stayed in the room and shrugged. He described the baggie out in his truck. It sounded huge, though a grain of cocaine sounds huge if you've never done cocaine. And for years, I thought an 8-ball of coke was an 8-ball, until I bought an 8-ball, and it was the size of a ping pong ball, and I told the dealer, "Dude, you're ripping me off." But that's later. Now I said, "I'll see." "You'll see is right," the man with the long silver blade said, and did that stab with his knife again. I wanted the cocaine, and I didn't, because, one, it exploded hearts. Two, it exploded heads. But, three, it did look fun in movies. And, four, guys in rock bands loved it. And anyways, I'd been A, smoking pot, B, huffing glue, C, huffing gasoline, D, huffing paint thinner out in my parents' one-car garage. In the break room, the owner laid out a tray of lunch meat and cheese. Later, the meat cutter stumbled in. He wore a little white butcher hat and a blood-stained apron. He looked like a praying mantis, bug-eyed and small-handed, stuffing ham wrapped in bologna into his mouth until he couldn't chew. He mumbled, "Come here." I followed him to the stairs, and he said, "I was just joking about that drug stuff," and told me not to mention it to anyone else, ever. So I didn't, and I haven't, until now. But his eyes were the size of buzzsaw blades, and his nose looked powdered with a knife. We stood there, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and I smelled the dead cigarettes on his fingers. Then, without push or provocation, he fell back and stayed, bracing against the cinder block wall. The first hangovers are the worst hangovers. 2 hours into the shift, our young heads, black clouds, raining down malt liquor and vodka. My nose stuffed up from snorting something that someone said later was not drugs. One of the little guys said, "I'm going to pass out." And the fat kid in the corner said, "I think I just shit my pants." Adam has a book coming out called Love Poems. Love Poems from Flood City?
Yes.
Love Poems from Flood City. So I'm going to read one Johnstown poem tonight. Johnstown, Pennsylvania. The chief of police tasered his son at Thanksgiving dinner. I kind of have a longish poem, so I'm going to finish with this one. It's set in the late 70s, early 80s. This is called Mr. Wilson Fights Fair. Mr. Wilson had two daughters, and one of them took a lot of acid. This was 1979 or so, and lots of people were on acid, but not Mr. Wilson. He drove a truck and drank canned beer and lived across the street from us. I was 8. My parents weren't on acid. They weren't on anything, not even canned beer. I was in the street when the van pulled up. It was close to dinner. Kids threw a tennis ball over the electrical wires and called pop-ups. I held my new catcher's mitt to my nose and smelled the oil. Mr. Wilson stood on the porch with Diane, the daughter who liked to eat acid. The van sported a gray primered paint job, mag wheels, and tinted windows. The guy driving it was Diane's boyfriend. He dressed in jeans and a t-shirt and work boots. Pay attention to the work boots. Pay attention to Mr. Wilson in his socks, his big toe sticking through a hole like a mole coming into light. Diane was 17, her boyfriend older, already bald on top, red ponytail down his back. By older, I mean 21 or 22, and a mechanic. The engine on the van spit terrible black smoke on purpose out of chrome pipes. Mr. Wilson leaned over the railing on his porch and said, "She's not leaving with you." The boyfriend leaned against his primer van. He didn't look high. He didn't look pissed. He looked the opposite of the goofy acid look I saw on teenagers' faces. Nobody threw the tennis ball or even talked. I wish I had my knife. I had a knife. I'd never used my knife. But I'd been in fights, one for 40 minutes, and come home with more blood on my shirt than shirt. An older teenager, 18 or 19 or even 20, made me hold lit firecrackers until they exploded in my hand, and my hand turned into a blue-black sky of pain. My dad had a belt and used it. My mom had a belt and used it. Certain things I knew already. "You want your ass kicked?" the boyfriend asked. Mr. Wilson came off the porch. Diane cried, then screamed, then ran inside the house. It was like we're invisible, all of us, in our ball, in our cheapo leather mitts. "Kick his ass, Mr. Wilson," someone said, an older kid. It was that time in America. People admitted to liking violence, and they rooted for their neighbors to win. Mr. Wilson moved to the lawn and said, "She stays." Diane stepped back on the porch, all her clothes stuffed in a black trash bag, like her whole life was garbage. The boyfriend said, "Then you get your ass kicked." Mr. Wilson put up his dukes. He was probably 40-ish, my age now, out of shape from the hours in his truck and all the canned beer and truck stop hamburgers. Diane said, "Daddy, don't." And, "Daddy, I hate you." I hadn't told my parents I hated them yet because I loved them. They were my parents, and they didn't fight people on the front lawn. My mom cleaned the blood from my fighting shirt and iced my nose with a bag of frozen vegetables. My dad sometimes put his arm around me and left it there until it felt like it would stay. Diane said, "Daddy, it's my fucking life." Her boyfriend said, "It's her fucking life." Mr. Wilson said, "Let's go." And they went. Mr. Wilson did a dance like an old-timey boxer. Then he got kicked square in the nuts. There was a loud thud, then a gasp for air. People didn't kick each other in the nuts in America in 1979. Diane screamed, and Mr. Wilson came to the front door and tried to pull her daughter back inside. "Kick his ass, Mr. Wilson," someone yelled, then everyone yelled it, and Mr. Wilson pushed himself from the brown grass of his front lawn and did his dance and got kicked square in the nuts again and dropped to the lawn like a man with testicles up in his stomach. Diane wrenched her mom into a headlock on the porch. Other parents stepped outside and watched from their own porches now. My mom appeared at our front porch, and I pretended not to notice. And Mr. Wilson, on his knees, cupped his balls through his jeans, then stumbled to his feet. The boyfriend said, "Haven't you had enough?" Mr. Wilson righted himself, like a country on the verge of collapse, like a country about to finish giving away all its factory jobs to other countries and quit paying its truck drivers a decent wage. And the mother, still in the headlock, was going to have to get a full-time job, even though she wanted to stay home with her daughter and make sure that daughter never ended up on acid and in love with a young man who drove a primer van. Mr. Wilson did his dance. I looked at his feet in socks, no shoes, no boots. I watched his toe, lone puppet in the grass. Mr. Wilson said, "Take off your fucking shoes and fight me like a man." The boyfriend contemplated that for a few seconds, sincerely, like a fair fight might involve removing his boots. Then he kicked Mr. Wilson in the nuts for the third and final time. So Mr. Wilson gasped and bent at the waist, finally falling to his knees and leaning back, his face to heaven, like people did in church when the answers could not be found in this world. And Diane, his daughter, released her mother from the headlock and grabbed her trash bag life and ran for the van where her boyfriend revved the engine and black smoke filled the street. Off the porch, my mom took my arm to lead me away, but I turned back to the fight. Mr. Wilson stayed down, mouth open but without a sound. Mrs. Wilson came to him. My mother said, "Let's go," and yanked me by the elbow. All anyone wanted was to be safe and prosper. Safe kids, small house, money in the bank for emergencies. No one fighting for their kids on the front lawn. But the fighting wasn't over. Not that night, not ever. In the next election, everyone voted Republican. In 10 years, my dad will lose his factory job, and our house will sell for shit, and grown men with trades will start working with teenagers in fast food restaurants, and women with college degrees will go back to waiting tables. And by the time the country starts to vote Democrat again, it won't matter. Everyone will be kicking each other in the nuts and bragging about the size of their fucking boots.